College football fans, welcome back to the College Ball Show. I'm Chris, he's Marshall, and we're here to banter back and forth and discuss the best sport during the regular season is college football here on the College Ball Show. Welcome back. It feels like it's been a year because last year was our last show. Ha ha ha, see you next year, all those dumb jokes when it comes to New Year's. But Happy New Year's, Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah. Whatever you're, you know, Kwanzaa, whatever you celebrate, maybe you don't celebrate anything, that's fine too. But we have ourselves some college football to talk about. This is our last preview show for college football. For those who hang with the show and love college basketball too, that'll be what we turn into here very soon. That's why we call it the College Ball Show, okay? So, just so you know, let's get that. I don't think we've been mentioning that. But anyway, back on the College Ball Show podcast, like I said, it feels like 2 weeks, I think, something like that is the last show we did. And we have a fair amount to cover. We're going to keep it real nutshell, though. Normally, we have an in-depth Monday, you know, conversations about the big games and everything like that. And then we preview the week. Well, we have, you know, obviously a big, big game in the national title game. LSU and Clemson, two undefeated teams going head-to-head. It's going to be a great game, man. Two great quarterbacks, two great defenses. Whatever. We're going to get into it. But we will kind of nutshell some of the key notes. I actually said that I think we should just focus on the Gophers and Auburn the whole show and then slip in a little LSU Clemson, but my co-host wasn't having it. So, like I said, we're gonna break down some of these games real quick, just kind of talk about the marquee matchups and whatnot and what they mean to the program and the win and the lose and whatever. You know what I mean? And then, of course, we're going to preview and predict this national title game. I'm really excited about it. It is this coming Monday. God, it feels so long since the last time. It's only been a week since New Year's Day, but a week goes quick, man. It really does. This November and December, for me anyway, has just flown by. But anyway, if this is your first time listening to the College Ball Show, you can find it right here on blogtalkradio.com/ropeadoperadio. You don't need to just listen to it. It streams live and archives here on Blog Talk, but you don't have to just listen to it on Blog Talk. If you want to find the College Ball Show under the Rope It Up Radio podcast, it's on Apple Podcasts, Player FM, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spreaker, really across the board. We're also part of the Grueling Truth Sports Podcast Network, which can be found everywhere, including iHeartRadio. In fact, if you use your Siri or Alexa through Spotify and TuneIn, you can find either the Grueling Truth Sports Podcast Network or the Rope It Up Radio. And while you're at it, why don't you head on over to thegruelingtruth.net. That's thegruelingtruth.net. It's football, basketball, baseball, boxing, everything in between. They got a great sponsor over there, betnow.eu, with the promo code TGT. And one more thing. If you're thinking about cutting the cord, or maybe you have and you just feel like you need some sort of cable package, I got something you may want to take a look at. It's called AT&T. TV Now. It's streaming cable. Okay, they have the 7-day free trial, so you can just give it a whirl without paying anything. But the plans start as low as $50 a month, no annual contract. You can stream it anywhere. It has the cloud DVR, and you know, it's available across the country in limited cities. It's available right here in Minneapolis, in other parts of Minnesota, California, Texas, New York, even in the Midwest, in the upper Northwest as well, with Seattle and St. Louis. Just head on over to the website. It's called AT&T TV Now. Like I said, it's streaming cable. You can put your area code in there. It's a growing streaming cable network, so it will be adding more cities as it goes along. Anyway, let's go ahead and bring in Marshall, my co-host, and see how he's doing on this lovely Wednesday afternoon. The first Wednesday of, no, it's not the first Wednesday of January. What am I talking about? We already had that last Wednesday.
All right. Rant number one. I'm not a Texas football fan. The sport of Texas, yes, because I live down here. But the Longhorns. This is such a joke again that they get another bowl game, Chris, where they again played a team whose hopes and dreams were crushed from making the Final Four, and they just have another, like, great bowl game. So I'm sure all Texas fans are like, man, we beat Utah. Look at us. You know, look at us, blah, blah, blah. Looking at next year. No, screw Texas. Last year, y'all got Georgia when they came off a heartbreaking conference championship loss. Now you get Utah again. So I hope next year that Texas gets the toughest bowl game where they have to travel the furthest distance and they play the toughest team they can. Because I'm tired of Texas winning bowl games where they're getting, like, a favorable opponent. But aside from that, Chris, we definitely had a very good Final Four game. Like, one of the better ones we've seen in the span of the Final Four playoff being, like, in place. You know, we're obviously referencing the Ohio State Ellis.
What are you talking about? Did you see the first quarter score?
The Ohio State Clemson game. Okay, obviously the Oklahoma LSU game was fun if you bet over or if you pounded LSU. But for the Ohio State Clemson game, which obviously someone had to win, someone had to lose, and now we got the repercussions of that. That was a really fun football game to watch. You had an Ohio State team that came out prepared. A lot of people had wondered, you know, it's Ryan Day's first big bowl game. Is he going to be able to live up to the hype of it? You know, because Meyer always had his guys ready to go. How would Ryan Day be ready to go? And I think Day was pretty ready to go when the game started, except for the offense in the red zone. For anyone who's watched football for a long amount of time, you kind of get that spider sense in your head of like, or, you know, whatever, that, okay, like, Ohio State's been playing really good football so far. Like, defense is on par. Offense is moving the ball. But there's no touchdowns. It was field goal. A wide receiver dropped a wide-open touchdown pass. The running back dropped a wide-open touchdown pass. The running back dropped a floating pass that could have been a touchdown. Like, you look at the score and you're like, man, Ohio State is killing these people. But the scoreboard doesn't reflect it. And that turned out to be the kind of, you know, the snake that bit them. Like, you really couldn't have had a much better half, but you had a feeling that Clemson would get it going, and obviously everyone knows this by now, but to kind of recap, one of my main takeaways from the game is, man, Chris, that Ohio State played a hell of a football game, but Clemson's defense, to give them credit, and we'd wondered about them all year because they had not played anyone that good. You know, the whole year was ACC sucks, Clemson beats up on everyone. That defense really stepped up and gave their offense time to get clicking. But what a really fun game, a great game of college football. Had some controversial calls, had a comeback, had star players being stars. That Ohio State running back was playing on a bum ankle, and that dude was just running as hard as he possibly could. A fun game to watch, but it just goes to show you got to cash in on your red zone trips. And that's the one part Ohio State didn't do, and eventually Clemson woke up and is now in the national championship facing LSU.
Yeah, that's well said. And, you know, the time that they did score on the second drive was that big-ass run by Dobbins, you know? So
yeah. Oh, that guy had a hell of a game.
Yeah. He had a hell of a season. I mean, he's had a hell of a career.
You're right. I just didn't see him as much, but yes, agreed.
But, yeah, that was that 68-yard one-play drive. So they didn't even get in the red zone on that. But you're right. That was key. I mean, When you're up 16-0, you had the 14-play drive, you had a 7-play drive, you had a opening drive that went 10 plays. You put drives together. Even when you punt, you had 7-play drives or turnovers, or they did score a touchdown to get up 23-21 later in the game on a 13-play drive. So they were moving the ball, they were putting up the stats. But, you know, I think both sides of the equation, not just their defense, but Clemson as a whole, what was going to happen if they got down, and they obviously got down 16-0. And right the moment they got down 16-0, they came right back with a 10-play drive, 4:35 on the clock. They really looked good there, and then, you know, held on defense three and out, and boom, it's 16-14. You're like, all right, well, that was interesting, and it kind of felt almost like that Wisconsin game in a sense, you know, with Ohio State and Wisconsin when they got on them 21-7. And then there just wasn't much noise after that for a while. You know, Clemson got all the way up 21-16, and you're thinking, man, oh, wow, this is something. Now, like I said, they did have a really good drive where they got up 23-21 ultimately. But, yeah, the red zone defense was huge. Obviously, there were some calls. I mean, that, you know, the scoop and score I thought should have counted. But, you know, it is what it is. It is what it is. We've seen that from time to time. I wasn't completely pulling my hair out over the late hit on the quarterback or the rough hit on the roughing the passer on Ohio State's defense. That didn't blow me away. Like, oh my God, that's the worst call ever. It's not like we see with Aaron Rodgers at times or some of these quarterbacks in the NFL, of course, but it could have went either way. Usually they do called a little looser in college, so it's kind of like, well, I've seen dudes get mugged and not no penalty. So, sure, you can point out that play because the reason why you pointed out that was on the third down, Ohio State would have got the ball back, and I think a play later or two plays later, Clemson scored a touchdown. So that obviously did play into it, and the scoop and score obviously plays into it too because, you know, I've said it before, I'll say it again. If you have a helmet on, if you have a shoulder pads on, you have cleats on, and you catch a ball and take two steps, I don't care what direction, I don't care. It's a football move. If you're on a field with those three requirements, maybe four because you have the ball in your hands too, that's a football move. Jesus Christ. I mean, come on. But either way, you know, it is what it is. You know, like you said, the red zone, if you would have scored even one of those touchdowns early, you would have had a bigger lead, you know. So did that change some of the game? Yeah, you can't say it didn't. Sure, it changed some of it, but, you know, it is what it is, and it was a great game. It was a fun game. And for a second there, you thought, man, Clemson, where are you at? But once they scored, then obviously once they scored again, it was like, all right, dude, this is going to be the game we thought it was. And overall, still a hell of a game, you know, 28-23. You know, both those teams return a lot of players, especially Clemson, and they both return their quarterbacks too. So, you know, lots to look forward to for Ohio State, even though they did lose some guys. Hey, you saw how good their defense was without their stud defensive end. They even made some plays with him on the sidelines at times, not even the games he missed or whatever. So, it is what it is, but you're right. It was a good game, and, they got the job done, point blank, period. You know, there were one, right. Go ahead.
We'll just one point to add on, and then we'll move on to more games. And your emphasis of, like, the call and the targeting, that's really been picking up a lot more, I noticed, this year, kind of near the, like, conference championships and bowl games specifically. The emphasis on targeting for college football seems to be more relevant. And whether they change the calls or not, and, you know, they review it or not, I feel like there's more of an agenda now for refs really to look for it. Now, by the book of the rule of the book, whatever, that completely was targeting on the Clemson quarterback. 100% was the right call. But being a guy who likes to, you know, obviously bet on games and watch bowl games and enjoy football over Christmas, it seems like there's been a bigger deal now on targeting. And again, I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I mean, obviously the deal is for importance. The only thing that kind of bothers me is that sometimes I think the refs kind of do forget how athletic these young guys are. And when you see a targeting of a player that, like, okay, well, man, the quarterback drops at the last second.
Yeah.
It sometimes can be so huge of a loss to a team, Chris, for a dude that, you know, he's playing football how he's been raised, and due to the guy falling down at the angle he did, the guy couldn't change his mind. Like, I love the emphasis. I think it's a great thing for football. You got to keep kids safer, but it's becoming more of a thing now, so I only expect next year to have more and more people gone from targeting. Now, like, spearing and cheap shots need to leave, but it's just frustrating occasionally to see the refs kind of forget that, hey, we're playing a football game where these guys are running maybe 18 to 20 miles an hour in complete full sprints. Like, we got to try to remember that so that we don't let the targeting thing become bigger and then also take guys out who should be playing in games. Like, I saw a senior get ejected in a bowl game, and it was a good call. But the targeting thing's going to keep coming around, and hopefully they keep doing a good job of policing it.
Well, and they have the key is they have the review right in front of them too. So
true.
Kind of speaks to what you're talking about. Like, okay, so they are pushing a little bit more towards, you know, checking it out and stuff like that. That's cool. But you had the review to make that decision as well. And so I think you're right. It's kind of like you see in the NFL now, the refs are like, let's just call it good and then see what happens in the review booth. Let's just do something. And we'll review it. It's going to get reviewed anyway. You know, that type of thing. It's a little – as long as they don't get where you're reaching – the defensive end is reaching for a ball and your pinky scrapes a part of the quarterback's helmet, as long as it doesn't – because that's the NFL. As long as it doesn't do that, I'm okay with – I can see that you're right. You're definitely right as far as targeting. And you know, they had that one rule where they weren't – you know, they I don't know how it even passed. Sometimes this happens with these committees. I mean, look at our Congress. But, you know, it's like how – remember the year they introduced it, they didn't – if it wasn't a targeting, the guy – it still was a penalty. You know, or he – you know, it was still – there was still something there. And you're like, okay, so the guy doesn't get thrown out, but then what? You know, I couldn't believe that was – but they got rid of that real quick, obviously. They changed it. But – yeah, I think as long as they're not there's going to be some, you know, in-between calls, and I'm okay with that. Like you mentioned, sometimes it is the offensive player adjusting at the last second. I mean, we got helmets on for a reason, dude. They're going to hit once in a while, you know what I mean? So, yeah, as long as it doesn't get like the NFL where literally a pinky will do the trick. Scraping a quarterback's helmet barely. You know what I mean? As long as that's not the case. But we'll see. We'll definitely see how that goes. And I agree with the targeting call. I guess my point was I've seen a lot worse than that. But you're right. That was legit. And that's why I kind of was like, you know, I'm okay with that one. The other one, though, that was a scoop and score in my opinion. When it's called that. You call it that? There's enough evidence to say that wasn't a scoop and score. I disagree with that. But, you know, that's sports, dude. If you're watching it long enough, shit happens, dude. You know what I mean? It is what it is. Like you said, we coming into the season every year, there is that which team wants it more, which team into the bowl season, I mean, which team is not that pumped where they're at, which team is like Utah coming off a heartbreaker to Oregon as far as a heartbreaking way to end their season. Were they up for the gusto? Was it a bad style matchup? You know, you did kind of see Utah come out flat again, and some people are kind of stuck, even though it was 3 weeks ago. You get kind of stuck in that, like, God, we had a chance. We would have been, you know, and it's hard to get that out of the back of your head, especially when you're 18 to 22. So we saw that. And then we also saw some really good games. Even like I'm looking at Navy, Kansas State was a damn good game. Arizona, Florida State was actually a pretty good game. There was a variety of games, you know, like that, where you're just like, you know, it didn't mean a whole lot, but it was some fun stuff. You know, it was a good game. Alabama pretty much from the jump with that deep bomb, you know, jumped out on Michigan. Competitive game until it wasn't 35-16. Michigan got beat. Like I said, there was a variety of other games that were good. That Kentucky, Virginia Tech. I thought Virginia Tech was going to win that game. That was a good game. There was a handful of good games down the stretch. Obviously, Georgia bounced back and got a win over Baylor, and Baylor now lost their coach to Carolina. I guess if you're Baylor, you're kind of pissed. But hey, you know, at least he got them pretty far back to where now, if you pay a good coach, you know, at least you have recruits, you have a recruiting cycle. At least it's looking a lot better than it was 3 or 4 years ago. However, it does suck to lose a coach this late in the year because a lot of the best candidates are taken. Now, maybe they'll get one from some, you know, from this game coming up. That's different. Then you're okay there, but a lot of them have already been taken, as we know. So that's a little in between for Baylor, but I thought Georgia came out and said, all right, you know, we're going to win this one and we're going to go out with a bang. And I thought that they did with a big win. Oregon and Wisconsin, 28-27, back and forth game. Good game. Just when it looked like you thought, okay, I kind of feel like that team's got momentum. It kind of swung back and forth. And then obviously the one I'm really excited about, from a, you know, a local perspective was, Minnesota beat Auburn 31-24, our toughest opponent. When you look at that ranking, not the AP or anything like that, but if you look at the last ranking we had going into the bowl season, you know, Auburn had faced five in the top 13, which is just nuts. They're coming off a Bama win. What was it, 23-20 against LSU? To beat that team when they had their big daddy top five, top 10 pick or whatever he's going to be in the middle still. Like a lot of those Auburn dudes played, which was pretty cool. There was the edge rusher who didn't play because he did kind of tweak something. So he didn't want to hurt himself even further. And that's cool. You know, there was a pretty good linebacker for Minnesota who needed a surgery, and there's really no reason to put it off at that point. If you think about his future and how he can improve his draft stock, maybe get drafted, whatever. But it was a damn good game. And there was a couple times where it looked like Auburn was, you know, they got up by a little bit. Minnesota overtook them, and then it was tied, 17-17, 24-24, that type of thing. It was really key to come out and do what we did offensively and defensively. To Auburn, not that they had this great juggernaut offense, but I think they came in averaging like 34, 35 a game, and they did have a legitimate defense. So that was awesome to do that. And if you think about it, the defense only gave up 14 points because – we had kind of a knucklehead interception early in that game, and they held them to a field goal. So that's really not the defense's fault. And then there was a kickoff return, too. Or was that a punt return? I think it was punt or kickoff. I can't remember. Special teams is an area where the Gophers need to improve next year. But, yeah, man, overall, I thought it was a pretty fun bowl, you know, season. A couple of these games matched up. That Florida University of Virginia game, seemed like Florida was going to roll, but they kept it, you know, interesting. 36-28, that was another one. The Penn State-Memphis game I thought was really fun to watch. Memphis got off to a good start, high scoring, 53-39. Notre Dame just smacked all sorts of silliness out of Iowa State, 33-9. That was kind of a shocker to me. I did like how the Saturday before the big bowl, the Rose Bowl and all the other big bowl games, I liked how the semifinals had their own Saturday, but damn, it would have been nice if we could have get it, you know, this last Monday. That's too large of the way the dates turned out, that's too long of a break in my opinion. Any other items you want to add as far as games or notes or just your opinion on the large gap when you start to add it up, you know, the 28th, I'm looking at a calendar right now, the 28th, that's over 2 weeks. You know what I mean? That's too long.
I agree. I get from the TV angles and all this stuff, you got to kind of lay it out. But, I don't know. And you got NFL playoffs, and not that NFL fans aren't going to watch college, but it's like kind of like you have Saturday football, Sunday football. It's like, oh, we got Monday too. It's like kind of that could have been like, you know, the further NFL goes, the more invested that gets. You could have probably had the LSU Clemson game like this past Monday. Like, do we really need a 16-day break? Like, that kind of is kind of just an awkward way to coach because, you know, you obviously Dabo and Coach O, like, you can't – obviously you're not going to be too physical with the guys. And you can watch film, but 16 days is – you almost probably had to give the kids 3 days off, you know, because there's such thing as, like, overcoaching. Like, you can't watch film and recruit people for 16 straight days without losing your mind. So I'm with you. I wish there would have been a little bit of a shorter break.
Well, you already took a month off, too, or maybe a little less than a month. But, you know, you already took 3 weeks off already, you know?
Yeah, and now you got 16 more days. I'm with you. I know that the games on New Year's Eve didn't always work out, but this plan of having this long of a break for two teams who have been rewarded and deserve all the praise they can get, it just puts coaches in an awkward position. Players kind of lose the momentum. Like, I don't know. It wasn't ideal. So I hope next year we don't have this long of a stretch. I mean, hell, we kind of bitch about when the NBA takes 7 days off for sometimes like between the finals, but seven's really not bad compared to 16. for my, I guess, little bowl game hot takes, USC bringing back Clay Helton is stupid. And it bothers me.
Iowa looked like LSU out there, for Christ's sake, putting up 49.
We got massively outcoached. Massively. Now, I know that a USC Clay Helton homer or believer is going to say, well, yeah, but Slovis got hurt. Okay, the quarterback did get hurt. But up until him getting hurt, he was our only hope and living prayer because we had not game planned for Iowa at all. Now, obviously, okay, Iowa's got Kirk Ferentz, a long time legit vet coach, but Iowa's offense was murdering us. This is an offense that would score 12 points a game. I remember when we were doing a podcast earlier this year and we looked at Iowa's three biggest games and we're like, man, Iowa keeps losing all their big games. Well, shit, their offense averages 12 points a game in what we consider big games. Their offense looked like the damn greatest show on turf with the Rams back in the day. We weren't stopping them at all. And that does come down to coaching and game planning. And Clay Helton is not a great coach. And God, did we get exposed. I'm happy Slovis played as long as he did because he was playing a hell of a game. I wish he hadn't got hurt. And I don't even think we're able to win that game. I doubt we do. But Clay Helton, I get that we weren't going to bring in Meyer. I do. But people were like, well, they weren't going to bring in Meyer, so who should sell for the USC job? We can't get a big name. Well, how about we just get some dude that we might think is a good coach? Like, realistically, look at the Gophers now. Like, P.J. Fleck was not a big name, and I love the guy. But when he came from Western Michigan, he was not an elite guy. He brought up a non-five team to become a good team. And I'm not ripping the guy because I love him and what he's doing there is great. But, like, that wasn't
I'm about
like
to
a,
mute you, dude. You're on thin ice right now, dog.
That wasn't a ESPN news clip hired. People respected it. And look now, he's got the team playing with like the best record they've had in almost 80 years. So you can't tell me, well, Urban was off the table. We didn't want him to run the program. So who else is going to replace Clay Helton? Well, what the hell has Clay Helton done that keeps him with such an elite name that we can't bring in? It's mind blowing. Why not bring in, you know, I know Missouri hired the guy from Appalachian State. Again, I'm not saying he's a perfect answer, but there's so many coaches in college football that you can view as up-and-coming, potentially strong, and you continuously keep a guy who, besides the Sam Darnold year, where I'll give him some credit, but you got to give – look at who our quarterback was that year. The Sam Darnold year is the only great year he's had. And I don't know. It just to hear media people say, well, you know, Clay Helton, we couldn't bring in a big name for USC. Well, how about we bring in just a legit good football coach? And why not talk to Mike Norvell? Again, I'm biased on the guy because I think what he's done in Memphis has been phenomenal. But you got to tell me, like, Norvell wouldn't have considered USC. I would say that nowadays USC and Florida State are on the relatively same playing field. Again, who knows if Norvell picks us. But just,
I agree with that comment.
It's just massively frustrating because I know next year, Chris, USC is probably going to win 8 or 9 games. Probably 8. And we're not going to win as an underdog because Clay Helton's like 2-17 as underdog in his career. And we're going to be like spinning our tires again. And it's frustrating. And again, I'm not asking to get back to the Pete Carroll days when we were like Reggie Bush, Matt Leiner, and elite. But
it's respectable.
But we should be back to where at least we have an outside chance to contend for the Final Four and be a consistently ranked top 15 to top 20 team throughout the year with a couple of maybe upset wins here and there. But, yeah, respectable team. But it's over. We'll see. It's another year of that same shit, so whatever. I will say the Oregon Wisconsin game was a really fun game.
Yeah.
You wouldn't know from the scoreboard that Wisconsin had four turnovers and lost the game by 1 point. I mean, I would have been massively frustrated as a Badger fan to go there, you know, and see your team play a pretty good game, but just be careless with the ball. And I mean, Oregon's offense at Herbert, the quarterback, really didn't have a flashy day. He had a couple of runs where, like, they called a good play and he kind of had a bootleg and he's quick enough to go, but they shut him down. He didn't do anything flashy. But when you lose a turnover battle by that big of a margin, I mean, just, you know, if you only have three instead of four or two instead of four, like, the Badgers probably win. That was that's a tough one as a fan to see your team play pretty good, but just have too many fumbles and then Oregon win the game and Oregon celebrate, you know, and they had the right to celebrate. They did play a hell of a game. And obviously that was one of the higher end bowl games because you had a great Big Ten versus a great Pac-12 team. But I just frustrating from the angle of just the turnovers. Those can really come back to kill you. And my most fun player the bowl season I watched all throughout the whole bowl season was, man, Louisville's quarterback. That dude put on a show. I don't know. I gotta check on the name and see if he's coming back. But for just simply sitting down to watch a game of football, and I get that Louisville is more motivated than Mississippi State, and it showed. But, man, I became a Louisville fan for a day because that dude was – it was just like a little version of Michael Vick. That dude was slinging the ball, running the ball. He put on a clinic that I didn't see in the other bowl games. I'm not saying that Joe Burrow obviously didn't put on a better performance. I'm not stupid. But for just a sit-back and fun watch, man, Louisville's quarterback, if he's back next year, I'll watch as many games as I can because that dude's a fun watch. And credit to them for just having a hell of a fun game to enjoy.
Yeah, it seemed like they were making some noise this year. Like you can see, maybe they're going to take a nice step. I believe he is back. There was a couple other good games as well, kind of early in the process. Hawaii and BYU was one of the earlier ones. I remember watching that right around Christmas time. I was impressed with Washington whooping Boise State 38-7. That kind of was like, wow, Utah State and Kent 51-41. That was fun. You know what wasn't fun is my Miami Hurricanes getting beat 14-0 against La Tech. Yeah, I said it. And sometimes a name can not be as good as the actual coach. And Dan Enos got fired. And, you know, the way this season's gone, he probably should get fired offensively, but, you know, it wasn't all his fault, obviously, but he got fired. And he was a guy that was going to take over the Alabama program for the offensive coordinator. And sometimes, you know, sometimes they've had some really good ones. Sometimes it's just been okay, you know, since Saban really started changing his system, you know, once he started seeing, oh, shit, you know, I got to do that. And they've been really damn good on offense since he's done that in a variety of ways, too. I've been pretty impressed. He's one of them, though, that maybe he would have looked good in this system and whatnot, but overall, you could strive for perfection, but some of his press conferences, dude, you're just like, you got to have some sort of positivity somewhere in there. And he was just like, so are you a perfect coach, too? Like, have you never, like, the way he was, I don't know, he's just a bad, maybe he was just a fit. But, you know, when you're a coordinator and a coach, a top-of-the-line coach, it can't be just fit because if you're a great coordinator, you tailor the offense of what you got. You know what I mean? So that was ugly too. Any other notes, news notes that you want to talk about before we get into this LSU and Clemson matchup, sir?
No, I'm good. Overall, my bull betting season wasn't great, but it wasn't off like last year. I think I turned out probably around even, so I can't complain. And the Seahawks won me a ton of money last week, so I kind of just wiped away all the negative bull losses that I'd had. Oh, besides Saban being a prick. So I had bet that Alabama would get under 17 points in the second half because Michigan's defense didn't play that bad. And Alabama had scored 10 points, and there was like 8 minutes to go. Bama goes on literally a 7.5 minute, like 14 play drive, and there's like 30 seconds left. Bama's up, I think, 14 or 18. And I'm like, okay, you know, as long as Bama doesn't score, I'm good. 25 seconds to go. I see three guys line up in the backfield kind of like in a triangle. I'm like, oh, good, they're taking a knee. Nope. Fucking slam the ball in. And the announcers are like, man, you know, you never know as a coach when there might be some bad blood from back in the day. Because normally Saban runs the clock out there, but for whatever reason. And then Harbaugh, with 1 second left as they're trying to score just for the hell of it, calls a timeout for Michigan. So I had a little bit of a cat fight, Chris, cost me some money. But besides that, I'm good to move on.
I like it. I like it. I mean, I've thought he's been a prick ever since he was given his running backs like 38 and 42 carries when you know damn well you got someone behind him who's going to be the star the next year. You know what I mean? Like, why not give him some tread and save some of the tread? Pretty sure that was Lacey that he did that. I think it was 42 or 38 carries. It's like, dog.
Yeah. Yep.
Come on, man. Come on, dude. Why are you doing this to your guy? Like,
I know.
Put in the shifty guy or something. But anyway, yeah. You know, a lot of these head coaches that are studs are just pricks and ego and all that. It happens,
yep.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
That's how it goes. And some of them are better than others of showing it. You know what I mean? I think that's really the difference, showing it. You know, a lot of people don't like the Steve Spurrier approach at times. You're going to get labeled a dick quicker than somebody else. But anyway, breaking down this LSU-Clemson game, 14-0 apiece. Big, big game. We're just going to start out right away with my co-host's favorite stat to kind of judge all games on. According,
oh, Christ.
According to ESPN's Football Power Index, they don't like LSU. 55.8, which I just
– I know.
That always gets me. There's no draw in this one. There's no tie in this one. 55.8 to 44.2. They are in favor of Clemson getting the job done. I was about to say tearing down the nets, but that won't come until April. Now, Lawrence, you know, obviously this is a QB matchup in heaven, Burrow and Lawrence, 55-6 and 36-8, especially the last, like, 6 or 7 games. For Lawrence, I'd say the Clemson has a running back advantage, I think, wide receiver-wise. Definitely favors, LSU because they have more, and it seems like Higgins to Chase straight up is Higgins is chasing Chase, so to speak. Chase had 75 catches, 18 touchdowns, and damn near 1,600 yards in college. You know what I mean? Like, that's so crazy, dude. You know, I look at LSU and Alabama, and that's the only other – that's probably the only two that I would favor wide receiver-wise this year anyway with my beloved Minnesota Gophers. But that – I mean, those stats are just ridiculous. But anyway, the over-under set at 69.5, I think that's pretty legit. We've seen Alabama and Clemson go head-to-head, and those games are in the 30s, right, a lot of the time. So that makes sense. You can have solid to great defenses, but sometimes in college football, it just doesn't matter. We're seeing that in the pros now the last 3 to 5 years as well. If you remember that field, yeah, sure, the last four, you know, handful of probably four teams left last year in the pros, those were defensive struggles. But if you remember that Philly Patriots game in the Super Bowl, that wouldn't be classified as a defensive struggle. So we're right about 70 points. Vegas has LSU 6-point favorite. Obviously, you know, it's a Sugar Bowl site, right? And it's New Orleans, so they get a bit of the home field, but the way it's not really – it's a little different than that. The whole home field advantage thing, well, first of all, you know, they maneuver the national championship to different sites every year. And those are already set for the next couple of years. So, I mean, it is what it is. You know what I mean? The Sugar Bowl and the Saints that where they play, that just happens to be there. It's just like the Super Bowl. Yeah, every team has had a chance to win their own, you know, the home state, you know, with the Super Bowl. So I think some people are making it a little bit more than others, especially people that haven't been watching college football. This stuff happens, you know what I mean? I mean, even being a Miami fan in the 80s, well, guess where a lot of those, you know, games were? In the Orange Bowl, you know what I mean? Like, it is what it is. Is the Rose Bowl always skewed to the Pac-12 then? Because it's always out there, you know? We can say that every time. I mean, it is what it is, you know what I mean? And also in college, it's different than the pros. Because the pros don't allow, they don't have an allotment of, here's 40,000 or 30,000 tickets just the Vikings fans. They don't do that. They don't do that, whereas that's the case. Ohio State, because they didn't make it there, but Clemson and LSU both get the same amount of tickets that get allotted for them. Now, then it's like open to the public, but I can assure you it won't feel 100% like a home field advantage unless LSU gets up early. Then it will be one side's quiet, the other side's loud. But I just think that a lot of that is people haven't watched college football the last 30 years, so they just don't. It doesn't click. Like I said, the advantage for the Pac-12 team, wouldn't that be an advantage every single time then, since it's played in Pasadena every single time? Like, but it's not when you see the arena or the stadium, the way it's set up with the crowd. But it obviously helps to be in the same state travel-wise, but you travel to these sites so much earlier than you say, let's say, you know, for a normal regular season game or for, you know, the professional games, right? Because they had 16 game dates. So I don't think that plays into it a whole lot. And they're not sleeping in their own beds because, you know, the campus of LSU is not in New Orleans. So I'm not really looking into that. I have seen some of that. What's your thoughts here? Statistic-wise, they both are just crazy on offense. Defensively, statistically speaking, 21-10 is a big difference. Clemson only giving up a little over 10 a game. You obviously have to play that into who did they play? How many great defenses is, you know, did they play? How many great offenses did they play? And the quality of opponent. We all know LSU had one of the best schedules, and they won all the games. It's not like you could say, well, Auburn, you could point to certain things because they didn't win all their games, even though they had a crazy schedule. So I don't really look too much into it. Plus, I like what I've seen out of LSU in the last two games, keeping Oklahoma to 28 points and keeping Georgia to 10. And even A&M to 7 is saying something. They are starting to turn the page, and especially when you have that extra time to game plan as well like they did. It's damn near a bowl stretch with the 16 games. So, and what I mean by bowl stretch, obviously the end of the SEC championship until the semifinals stretch. So kind of, you know, breaking it down a little bit, I'll pass it to you and get your thoughts on, you know, how you see this one playing out, and then we'll get to predicting this puppy.
I think in games like this, you just got to look at, like, out of both offenses and both defenses, what's the strongest piece? And the strongest piece or X factor is LSU's offense. And it's the best in the country. It really hasn't been slowed down all year. And I don't think Clemson can slow it down either. I mean, Burrow and the offense, I know that Oklahoma's defense is nothing to brag about, but they just obliterated them. I mean, if Oklahoma's defense is such a joke, who else scored 7 touchdowns on them almost effortlessly? I think that this LSU offense is one of the better offenses we've ever seen. And I know I don't have, like, the historical data to prove it and everything, but – nowadays with how football's transformed, even in the past 10, 15 years, we've really not seen a college offense that just, like, scores almost effortlessly. They've had a couple of slow quarters and slow halves this year in the best conference in the country, but haven't had a slow, real game. I mean, where's the LSU moment this year where you're like, man, they came out flat? I mean, maybe, I guess, against Ole Miss for a half, you know, like near the end of the year when they're kind of in a little bit of cruise control. But I just think that's the big factor. And I know Clemson does have a good defense. And you know, they got pushed a little around, but they were able to bow up in the red zone against Ohio State. I don't think you can let LSU travel 20-20 and expect them to get stopped in the red zone. I mean, I do think
they're not even going to be in the red zone, dude, because they're going to be throwing 45-yard passes.
And I mean, I know Venable, like, everyone loves the Clemson DC, and I mean, they're obviously going to be well prepared too. But who is going to stop this offense this year? I don't think it's happening. So then if, you know, in my opinion, I think LSU is going to score around 38-40. Then you got to flip the script if you're a Clemson guy and say, well, can we do the same? And maybe, but as much as LSU kind of took some punches to the chin, to correlate with my co-host's boxing show, with their defense, that defense has still played a lot of really good offenses and done their part. LSU does not have an elite defense at all. But when you have possibly the best offense in the past 10 to 15 years, you don't need to have an elite defense. You need to have about a B average. You got to, if we're talking school with me as a teacher, your defense has to be about an 85 on Madden. If you're from an 85 to an 82 with your ranking, you're good. Like, if they had an elite defense, this team would be even scarier to see. So I just think the biggest thing is, barring a fluke barrage of turnovers and injuries, which I pray does not happen for a championship game, I just think LSU's offense is going to score around 40 points, or at least high 30s. And can Clemson counter that? I don't think so, because I think once the momentum gets going, as you said, the people who just paid extra to go to the game are there. It will have a little bit of a frenzy to it, despite all the corporate people and the even seats. I mean, obviously, there's going to be a little extra LSU home cooking. And that's a great point,
not to interrupt you, but that's a great point. The compared to the Super Bowl in this one, it's a lot funner, more college atmosphere in general. I mean, you can see it on both sides, I guess, but the climate in the building is way better than a Super Bowl.
Because
you have a ton of both sides there. It'll probably be about 60%, 70% fans. And then you have the other people that have money.
Yeah, because you really don't see many crowd shots in the lower levels of Super Bowls, because it's all corporate people. I mean, then you have, like, your blue-collar diehard fans, which is, like, most of America. Like, dude, my boys are in the Super Bowl. Let's go and pay the bucks and go. But at least in this game, you're going to have, you know, one side orange and one side either purple or yellow or both, you know. So yeah. So from a Clemson standpoint, offensively, they looked pretty sluggish in the first half against Ohio State. Lawrence couldn't find a rhythm at all. I was honestly blown away with whatever Ohio State's gameplay did. So, you know, bet $100 that LSU is looking at, hey, what did Ohio State do to make Clemson's offense, who, you know, has been good all year, look sluggish? Now, they're not probably necessarily going to copy everything, because obviously Ohio State and LSU have different defensive players and probably different schemes. But when you got 16 days to hang around the office, I guarantee those coaches, because coaches got nothing else better to do, are going to look at, okay, Ohio State really made Clemson's offense work until that, you know, helmet-to-helmet hit, which kind of woke up Lawrence. What was going on? And I think they'll try to mimic that. And I just, it's not a whole lot of analysis, but I just think you got to pay the respect to LSU's offense and give them the credit. And I think they're going to win the game. The spread opened at 1, and in about a 24-hour to 48-hour span, it went to LSU -3, and then 2 or 3 days later, it trickled to 6. And it's, I think it's bounced around a little bit from 5.5 to 6. I know it won't get to 7 just because 7's a magic number for football bettors in Vegas. If you gambled all, you obviously know 7's a huge number for football betting. And I don't think it would go there because people would just hammer Clemson if ever made 7. But when a line opens up and it shifts from a total of about 5.5 to 6 points in one team's direction, I think that's Vegas's way, the public's way of saying, man, I'm not sure if LSU can get beat. I think Clemson will have a hell of a game plan. I think their D is going to be ready to go. But I also think that every defense facing LSU this year who's been the SEC is ready to go, Chris. And no one has found a way to slow down Burrow. And I don't just quite see it stopping now, my friend.
Well, I'll say this. Auburn slowed him down to 23 points. But I'm just saying that because it makes my gopher sound better.
That was the best that we've seen. Yes, sir. That was the best we've seen. And I remember watching that game because I bet LSU under 35.5 points. I hit that bet. And LSU had a couple turnovers. They had a couple of sluggish red zone attempts. But Auburn, you're right. Auburn did keep them in check. But when that did happen, LSU's defense was able to win the game for the boys as well. So yeah. You're fair. You're fair. I guess they had one tougher game. And Auburn's
defense. But, I mean, that's going to happen.
So, sure.
That happens
throughout
the year. And like I said, it was really just to – shine on my Gophers. That's all it was.
True.
You know, we scored more. We scored more than them. You know what I mean? It doesn't really make any sense. I don't want to face LSU this year. You know what I mean? For a Gopher fan, don't get me wrong. But yeah, you're right. And I think that the key difference is, and we, you know, the first maybe 6 games of the year, it was kind of like, we still weren't 100% sold on LSU winning the national championship because you're like, damn, that defense though, dude. That defense is really not, it's bad. But then it started adding up more and more, and you start to add up the Texas game. You start to add up some of these games, the Florida game. You start to add up the games, and you go, yeah, but who made the plays in the fourth quarter?
Mm-hmm.
And down the stretch? Well, it was the cornerbacks. It was the cornerbacks that were making those plays. So, and there, by the way, there were some cornerbacks that dropped a bunch of picks during those games, too, that could have not – they wouldn't have had to made the late plays if they just made the first play. So, and then they did tighten up all – not all the way, like you said, to be an elite top 10 defense or whatever. I'm sure in some categories they may, but not many. And also, when you're putting up that many points, you know – can we see the number of the starting maybe 14 guys? You know, you start 11 guys, but, you know, on third down and you have about 13, 14 guys, sorry,
yeah,
Common, that play, you know what I mean, that you can kind of consider them starters in a sense. How many of those guys were on the field for all those stats? And when did they, you know what I mean, were they playing all the starters the whole game? And did they give up an extra touchdown or two to – you know, bump that up even more. I don't really know. I don't really care. But the thing I care about is they improved as the season went on. And also, even when they weren't great, that, like we said, they made the plays down the stretch. Those were the key moments, no doubt. Yeah, you had to keep scoring for offense, yeah, for LSU. But there was a couple of key moments in those games, and it was defensively. So, and like I said, they just did really well against an Oklahoma team that last time – I check and put up some points, and same with Georgia.
They beat Lincoln Riley's great offensive mind. They beat Atua. I know Atua had a bum ankle that game, but he wasn't 50%. You know,
he was playing upper,
you know, 80% ish. So they beat Tua and they beat Lincoln Riley, who had time to prep.
And Georgia's not a bad club.
They're not a bad club
at all. You know, and they. That wasn't a score fest. That wasn't they got by 41-38 or something like that. That was not that. They did really well in that game. So, and then obviously, like we just said. So, I'm picking LSU to win the game. I got 38-34, 34-31, somewhere in the 30s. I think both of them are going to end up in 30s. Maybe that's a cop out. Maybe it's 31-27. But just, I feel both of them will be in the 30s. And I think it'll be a really competitive game. But, yeah, 38-34, 34-31, somewhere in that range. just kind of staying with the spread, a tad over the spread. I wouldn't doubt at a almost right now anyway. It's Wednesday, Monday it could change a little bit, you know, by Monday, I mean.
Sure.
69.5. So, yeah, I think they'll both be in the 30s, but I got LSU taking it home.
I'll go, I said 40 a couple times. I'll go 42 to 31, thinking of football numbers.
So it's all touchdowns. They're like, fuck it, we just score touchdowns. That's all.
I don't know.
I mean, that's kind of how they do it.
Yeah. And I think that eventually people, Chris, because I still remember doing the podcast when we had your buddy on here too. And we did a podcast like the week after Coach O got hired. And my exact quote was, man, let's give this guy a chance. He's a hell of a recruiter. He's had a couple of chances to be a head coach as an intern, and he hasn't done that bad. But 85% of the media and a ton of LSU fans are like, what the hell? Why are we hiring this guy? Seriously?
Right.
And that even lived for longer. Like, even after Coach O's first couple of years, they're like, not sure about
the
guy.
I mean, even this year, for the first half of it, you know, they were still doubting it a little bit.
We don't know. And, like we were talking before the show, I think he's just too blue-collary, like, go have a beer, like, Cajun kind of guy. Like, the guy's going to, like, wrestle alligators and slap you. He's just not your typical Saban or your, you know, D'Antoni, or even, I mean, Dad was a little bit goofy, but even he's a little more coachish. But Coach O just, he doesn't care. He's happy. He's loving his boys. The guys, he cried on the field in the press conference talking to the reporter after the Bama game. I mean, tears were coming out of his eyes, because when he beat Bama, that was such a huge thing for him. So he's just not your typical guy. But all the haters, you really, really got to have a personal agenda against the man now to still find something to have against him. Because what he's done there, it just consistently beating top 10 teams over and over. He couldn't beat Saban. He finally beat Saban now. I mean, the dude has just put together a hell of a run and surrounded himself with great assistants. And I think that the OC's coming back. I've heard the OC's coming back, you know, the Brady, right? Joe Brady?
Yeah.
Which everyone's, you know, said that the connection him and Joe Burrow made together has made the team so much special. So I just think there's too much going on in the direction of LSU this year for them to slow down. And to top it off defensively, LSU's leading D-end sack leader, Divinity, took some time off. He was released from the team, I think, during week 6 for personal reasons.
Yeah.
Is back on the team. Coach O said, hey, the dude had to – well, I'll just paraphrase, get his ducks in a row. Everything's good now. He's going to come back and play for the national title. So I know you're probably not completely in full body game mode, but you're bringing back one of your best edge rushers who probably has been training his ass off for the past month, like any athlete would who's getting ready to play for a title game.
True.
So
yeah.
We're talking,
he's motivated.
We're talking,
that's for sure.
You would assume, you know, he's probably going to want to get some reps in. So we're talking about LSU's defense. You're bringing back your best edge presence, who I think had 6.5 sacks like within 6 weeks. So, I mean, that's just another cherry on top for this team. I don't know, man. It should be a very fun game. I'm with you. It should be a high scoring affair. But I think, as we both said, Clemson is going to be on the short end of the stick for this one.
And it's still ripping Clemson, you know what I mean? I mean, they had a hell of a run, and they're a damn good program, obviously. They were the ones who actually did get over the hump of Alabama when it counted two out of those 3 times. So, I mean, that's freaking huge. The only time they lost to them was in the semifinal.
Lawrence has to come back next year, right? We're going to have one more year of Trevor Lawrence, so –
and a lot of people coming back, too, because they had lost so many from that year before that it had returned that were going to go pro, especially on the defensive line. You know what I mean? So, yeah, it's great. And you know, maybe in a couple years we can see the new coordinator and who he brings in, and maybe that makes it a little less of a whatever. But you're right. I mean, just because he's not this huge X's and O's guy and he's had all this, you know, he hasn't had a ton of success as a coordinator, right? That's usually the problem with this guy.
Sure.
They say, oh, he don't know X's and O's. He never – what program did he do on a coordinator side? You know, I get all that, but it's a head coach, dude. And yep. P.J. Fleck was never an offensive coordinator. There's others that have been that way as well. So you're a coach. You brought in the right talent. You recruit. You motivate. You develop. That's key too. I mean, whatever they did to Joe Burrow, they did something right. Because I mean, we all know 2 years ago that this guy was not this guy at all. You know what I mean? So
last
like
year,
nowhere near. Like I would have.
He had 17 incompletions in a row against Auburn.
He was a game manager. He was like a 50% thrower. Like, this is crazy. So obviously he, you know, a lot of people had a chance to hire people, right? Y'all have. Yep. I mean, you can't say it's all fair, sure, because of timing and all that. But it's pretty much if you're a top 10, top 15 program, you have your pick of the litter of who you want to hire offensive and defensive coordinators. That's just the bottom line. So he hired the right one. Okay, well, isn't that your job as a head coach? So yeah, man, I'm really looking forward to this game. And you know, it's not like we're thinking Clemson's going to get their ass kicked. You know, nothing like that. But it's going to be a good game. Any last words before we get on out of here, sir?
I'm looking forward to maybe going to the Ole Miss season opener. They play in Baylor next year, and I got to get on my. Lane Kiffin, Ole Miss, the hottie time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Hey, that was pretty clutch to get that in at the last second, you bastard.
Got to finish on a good note. Anyways, Chris and I will be back. We will do a recap show of the national title game, which is we both think will be a hell of a fun game to watch, which we both think LSU will win. I may bet a little money on LSU to win. But that's point spread. It's around that 6 or 7, man. You could easily see Clemson lose by 6 and LSU have a hell of a game. And then we'll get into college basketball. So college basketball is rolling. My Tar Heels maybe they need my podcast to help them out, because my God, it's a tough year for the baby blues. Maybe we should keep doing postseason football. I don't know. But anyways, Chris, I'll be back soon. Hopefully your new year started off right. Hopefully your goals are off to a good start, and enjoy watching LSU Clemson. The boys are out tonight. Have a good one. Peace.